From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
Santa Clara.
I'm from Fremont.
Pacifica, California.
Pleasanton. Oh.
I'm from Vallejo.
Me from Enoch.
Coming up, we'll begin our series on the redevelopment of the Hunter's Point shipyard.
We will ultimately, on Hunter's Point, have around 12,000 homes, high-rise condo development.
Then we'll look at the history of a neighborhood that was dramatically changed by redevelopment.
Fillmore Street was like a New Orleans type of atmosphere, with all nationalities, fun with around the clock.
And we'll talk to a San Francisco woman about her glamorous life as a chorus girl.
They would take us out to dinner and wine and dine us and treat us like celebrities. I was courted every night.
We're looking into the past and future of a constantly changing city today on Cross Currents. San Francisco is booming. Construction cranes loom over the city skyline and large-scale development is spreading. One of the most significant changes is taking place at Hunter's Point Naval Shipyard in the southeast corner of the city. Once a major employer, the shipyard has been dormant for years. Now a new plan calls for housing, shops, parks, and high-rises to be built on the site. All this week on Cross Currents, we're taking an in-depth look at the impact of San Francisco's biggest redevelopment project with reporter Daphne Matsiraki. Today we'll get an overview, starting with a tour of Hunter's Point, which has been renamed by its developers as the San Francisco Shipyard.
I'm standing at the top of Donahue Street on the easternmost side of San Francisco. From this hill, I've got a panoramic view. Right in front of me is the huge abandoned shipyard, the old docks, an enormous crane, and some vast empty buildings. To my right, I see Candlestick Park. Across the bay, I can see past the Port of Oakland to the hills. I trace the Bay Bridge west and end up with a stunning view of San Francisco's downtown skyline. It's a perfect spot for housing development, if you ask Danny Cook.
Well, think of the most beautiful development you'll ever see, and that's the picture.
Danny Cook is an executive vice president with Lennar Urban, the company chosen by the city of San Francisco to build the development back in 1999.
We will ultimately, on Hunter's Point, have around 12,000 homes. We will have high-rise condo development, hotel.
There will be affordable housing and a new retail center.
We'll have a lot of amenities.
And 25 acres of public space.
And when you look at our plans, what jumps out at you initially is the amount of greenery and coastal walking paths and bicycle routes and just a beautiful environment for people to live.
Cook says the development will be accomplished in two phases.
Phase one includes Hilltop, where we're standing and where we're currently developing. It has projected currently for 949 homes, and we have another 359 homes, I believe it is, on Hillside.
This should be completed within the next 5 years. Then there's phase two.
Phase two is the remainder of the naval shipyard. And the Navy are responsible for remediating environmentally the land. And once they have that remediated to the satisfaction of all the environmental agencies and the City of San Francisco, then they will convey it to the city, and then the city will convey it to us to proceed with development.
It should all be wrapped up in the next 7 years at a cost of $15 billion.
As you can see from the infrastructure, that's a huge investment by Lennar.
And it's taken a long time.
The project has been around the drawing boards for around 20 years. And as you can see from the size of the development like this, there's a lot of issues.
In order to understand why it's taken so long and how the project is affecting the people who live in this part of the city, we need to consider how we got to this point.
I figured this would be a better place. Yes, to quiet.
Of course, and it's a local church.
I have grandkids at home.
I'm meeting a longtime resident of Bayview Hunter's Point here at St. John's Missionary Church.
Okay, my name is Oscar James, born and raised in Bayview Hunter's Point on Navy Road. 1946.
James's father worked in the shipyard until 1956, and he got a job there himself in the 70s.
A lot of people working in the shipyard. When Eisenhower became president, that's when a lot of people started getting laid off in the shipyard. They were downsizing. A lot of people lived in the, both in Hunters Point, South Basin, Betrayal Hill. Everybody was making money, having fun. It was a mixed community at that particular time, with all different races that was here in the community.
Many African Americans migrated from the South to work in the shipyard. In 1950, African Americans made up about a quarter of the Hunters Point population. That grew to over 50% in 1960 and nearly 80% by 1970. But in 1974, the Navy left the shipyard.
A lot of people lost their jobs.
Thousands. Unemployment levels in Bayview Hunters Point quadrupled in the years following the closure.
It had a dramatic effect on the residents of Bayview Hunters Point.
By 1991, the shipyard was completely shuttered. How it would be repurposed made residents like James worried. Back in the 50s and 60s, African Americans were displaced from the Fillmore and Western Addition in the name of redevelopment.
But the whole concern has never really been about the residents of Bayview Hunters Point. We've always had to fight for our home.
And that's how the idea of the community being involved with the redevelopment was born. James shows me a letter from 1973 written by community members addressed to Joseph Aliotto, the mayor of San Francisco at the time. In the letter, residents laid down their idea of creating a new town in town after the shipyard would close down.
That was a paper that I was requesting different facilities in the shipyard.
They wanted housing, a theater, a bowling alley, a church. But instead of development, the community has witnessed deterioration. Nearly half of its population lives below the federal poverty level. James says,
Bayview Hunters Point has always been a black eye to the city and county of San Francisco.
Despite the need to revitalize the shipyard, it wasn't until 1993, 20 years after the Navy left, that the city announced redevelopment was officially happening. Immediately, a citizens advisory committee was created. Its aim was to hold any developers accountable to neighborhood residents. The CAC's offices are inside the construction site.
People were complaining about environmental issues, about the dust and all like that. And those are the kinds of issues that we hear, but we don't hear them as often now that the project has gone vertical.
Dr. Veronica Hanicutt is chair of the CAC.
The Citizens Advisory Committee meets on the second Monday of every month, as we have from the beginning of all of this. So we have had an opportunity to hear people express their concerns.
She describes how the design process worked at one of the apartment buildings.
They actually looked at the project and made their recommendations, and many of those recommendations were actually folded into the design of that particular building. So when the community comes together with the design team and with the city and county of San Francisco and their representatives, that wonderful positive things can be done.
The apartment building Hanicutt is talking about is going vertical right here at the entrance of the shipyard. Right now you can only see the wood frame, and it will be 5 stories tall when it's finished. Affordable housing that will be built down the way will look similar to these first 2 apartment buildings that are being built right here.
I think it all stems from the most intensive participatory planning process that I've seen in my 20 years of doing this kind of work.
Thor Koslovsky is the project manager for the Hunters Point Shipyard for the San Francisco Office of Community, Investment and Infrastructure. It's a long title for the former redevelopment agency. According to Koslovsky, they changed the name to dissociate the agency from the failures of the past.
We have almost 300 acres of parks out here throughout the whole project, tons of housing.
Koslovsky says the community participated in all the planning and design details.
All of that sort of laid out in creating what we call a design for development document, and it's a planning document that replaces the zoning code for this area, and it sets the height limits and the kinds of buildings that should be out here and the form. That's one level, so that took, you know, years.
What's underneath the surface of this land, he says, also delayed the implementation of the project. That's the legacy of the Navy's work, which left a Superfund site.
The Navy's cleanup program and the transfer program is subject to federal funding. So the Navy can only clean up as fast as they get funding for. You know, they had spent up to date since 1992 about $850 million.
From 1992 until 2012, only 30% of the site was cleaned up and much less conveyed to the city. He says that the last parcel will be transferred in 2021. That's nearly half a century since the closure of the shipyard. Across town at City Hall, Bayview Hunters Point Supervisor Malia Cohen says that what's going on in the shipyard has been very deliberate.
There's a contract, an official contract signed with the city, the developer and the city, and then there's a social compact that's also been signed. So there are a lot of people that are watching this project.
Lennar promises the shipyard will be clean of its toxic waste, there will be thousands of new jobs, and there will be affordable housing.
As long as I'm here, I'm committed to ensuring that people are treated with respect, with dignity, and definitely not displaced.
Back at St. John's Missionary Church, Oscar James is showing me photographs of the people who have fought for these values in the shipyard throughout the years.
Well, I believe they're keeping the majority of the promises that we've demanded. We made them do a different job when they came here. We made them. And when I say we made them, we told them they're not coming in doing what they did in Western Addition. We have seen what they did in Western Addition. But the peoples in Western Addition were not together.
The future will depend on the extent to which the City of San Francisco and Lennar keep their promises, so that the residents are given a real chance to stay and be a part of the new Bayview Hunters Point shipyard that they've waited for so long. In San Francisco, I'm Daphne Mazziaracchi for Cross Currents.
That was the first part of our week-long series about the impact of San Francisco's largest redevelopment project, Hunters Point Shipyard. Tomorrow, reporter Daphne Mazziaracchi takes a closer look at housing to find out who's moving into and out of the neighborhood.
One of the things that is my priority is to ensure that there is zero displacement, particularly around folks in public housing.
That's tomorrow at 5 when our series continues. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard how redevelopment is reshaping the future of Bayview Hunters Point. Now we turn to another San Francisco neighborhood that was dramatically altered by redevelopment, the Fillmore District. In the 40s and 50s, the Fillmore was a vibrant mix of cultures and a national hotspot for jazz musicians. In this story from our archives, reporter Evan Roberts tells us how it earned its nickname, the Harlem of the West.
Blues singer Sugar Pie DeSanto grew up sneaking into the Fillmore's many jazz clubs.
Yeah, back in the day, a lot of us ladies used to go down to Leola King's nightclub called the Blue Mirrors, right on Fillmore Street. And the most famous guy would be there would be T-Bone Walker. And we would always, on the weekends, like Friday and Saturday, go there and hide out. And I just loved his playing, you know. He's just a master. Bright lights and whiskey and coffee. Real gutsy blues, you know, like down home.
It was sensational.
Leola King became one of the most well-known business owners in the city.
Because we brought in top entertainment, local entertainment, we had people from all over the continent that played there.
I remember those days. Hanging out when I had no business. I wasn't even 21. Forget it. Yeah, I won't tell you what I put on to try to make myself look look bigger. Tennis balls and all.
I hired a beautiful musician by the name of Frank Jackson. He pulled the crowd in and could hold them.
I'm Frank Jackson, pianist and vocalist. Grew up in the Fillmore District.
Everybody had a good time when he was working my club. He was really interested in his music.
Well, from the beginning there, for me, it was a learning experience, and for a lot of the other musicians too. But the fascinating part of it was we had a chance to meet all of the headliners who came to the Bay Area and played from different places. And one of the advantages of seeing them and being a musician, you had a chance to play with them. They would come and sit in. It's almost like a dream. So, wow, you know, I'm playing with him.
Jackson has played behind such legends as Charlie Parker, he backed up for Billie Holiday.
All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you?
And he played with John Coltrane. If you know their names, they probably played in the Fillmore. It was like a little piece of Harlem on the Pacific Rim. The neighborhood was rich with bars and jazz clubs. Jack's Tavern, the Town Club, Jimbo's Bop City, Club Alabama, the Blackhawk, Primalon Ballroom, and of course, Leola King's Blue Mirror.
San Francisco was built up of nightlife. Good times. Women dressed every day with their gloves and their hats on. Fillmore Street was like a New Orleans type of atmosphere. With all nationalities, fun was around the clock.
Yes, time is hard, baby, and hustling is really on.
You go out, you party all night, all day. People had their businesses open at 6 o'clock in the morning because they would only close just to clean the place and from the night, and then it would open right back up.
When he was in high school, Reverend Arnold Townsend, now an area pastor, would drive up from L.A. to visit the Fillmore on the weekends.
The street had a rhythm to it, and the whole street teemed with it. I heard an old man, probably in his early 80s, tell a young man quite a few years ago, you'll never know what Fillmore was like. He said there was a time that you could have went on the top of the Broadway Hill with all the flashing lights and the neon signs and the nightlife and the cars honking and the car headlights, and look back down on Fillmore, and it looked just like New York City to you.
That story was produced by Evan Roberts, and it originally aired on KALW in July of 2008. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. We just heard about the musical past of San Francisco's Fillmore District. Now we turn to music's partner, dance. Patricia Chin was born in San Francisco's Chinatown. She had never left the neighborhood when she auditioned to be a chorus girl. It was quite a leap for a young Asian American girl born in 1935, but Chin loved the adventure and saw it as a way to bring home extra money. Her group, the Chinese Vanities, performed in nightclubs up and down the West Coast. Patricia Chin sat down in San Francisco's StoryCorps booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum with her granddaughter, Christina Chin, and shared her tale of a glamorous life that came from humble beginnings.
One permanent job I had was as a board marker at E.F. Hutton & Company. I would watch the ticker tape go by, and I would mark the prices of stocks on a blackboard. Well, being a board marker, I only made $30 and some cents a week. When I looked in the one ads, I saw dancers wanted no experience necessary, will train. And I think the pay was something like $85 to $100 a week.
What kind of dancers were these?
Just chorus girls.
Really? $80. So then what did your mom think of you dancing?
I don't think she knew.
And what was it like going on tour?
Oh, it was fabulous because I'd never been out of Chinatown ever before in my life. And here I get to travel, meet people, and they would take us out to dinner and wine and dine us and treat us like celebrities. I was courted every night.
But did you ever fear or know it wouldn't last?
At 21, I don't think you fear growing old yet. But I know it wouldn't last forever. So, of course, I keep my eye open for a nice young man to come along and sweep me off my feet.
When did Grandpa Chin come into the picture?
One of his friends was having coffee with him at the On coffee shop. It was a coffee shop on Grant Avenue that was open 24 hours. He was telling him that I work at the Sky Room and that I was a real pretty girl. So they decided to come to the Sky Room to look me up. And they keep coming every night. Butch, my husband, didn't want me to work anymore at night. He said, this is no way to bring up a child with the hours I had. So I quit dancing at that time, and I got my job as a board marker back again. But when Grandpa passed away in 2002, I went back to classes again at the recreation center.
What inspired you to do that? Just having more time, or...
Well, some of my other friends who used to be dancers start going too. Then we said, why don't we start a little group and start entertaining for senior centers and maybe veterans hospitals too.
Mm-hmm.
If they ask me...
So, looking back, is there any one moment or experience that really stands out in your dancing career?
Oh, yes. On my last year of dancing, Columbia Pictures came out looking for a sleazy nightclub for Pal Joey to find a job in.
Mm-hmm.
And Pal Joey was played by Frank Sinatra.
I could write a preface on how we met.
And during a break, I would walk toward the edge of the stage, and Sinatra would come over and help me off the stage. Then he would light my cigarette, and we had a lot of small talk.
Huh.
And he promised to come up to the club to see me later that night.
Uh-huh.
And which he did.
Really?
He watched the first show, and I hurried up and dressed and came back down to say hello to him. And we took pictures. Got a picture of him holding my hand. Well, because of that incident, the drummer that was playing the music in our show at that time spread the rumor that I was Sinatra's secret girlfriend here in San Francisco. And I loved that rumor. I didn't deny it.
As my book ends, how to make two lovers a friend.
That story first aired on KALW in February of 2010. And you can hear more local stories at our website. It's kalw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Leela Day, Chris Hoff, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Liz Mack, Rachel Wong, Mary Reese, Julia Scott, Charlotte Silver, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. He is now a married Seth Samuel. Congratulations, Seth and Alyssa. Today's line producer is Sandia Dirks. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And because of your support, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. The music you're hearing is by Guy Fox. This Oakland band combines alt-rock energy with big band arrangements, and they have a reputation for getting folks to dance. Guy Fox plays a free all-ages show tomorrow evening at the Chapel in San Francisco, starting about 8 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
Hey, why don't we go to San Francisco, the Mission Disco, Que Pasa Contigo?